welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's finish up these movie reviews with Zero Days. This documentary examines the origin and purpose of the Stuxnet virus and how the digital world may be the new medium for international warfare.
Why can't we talk more openly and publicly about Stux?
Two answers before we even get started. I don't know, and if I did, we wouldn't talk about it anyway.
It spread to any Windows machine in the entire world. We didn't know if it was set to turn off all electricity plants around the world or it would launch some attack. This is not your ordinary criminal doing this. This is someone bigger.
This has the whiff of August 1945. Somebody just used a new weapon, and this weapon will not be put back into the box.
I remember when the Stuxnet virus happened, and I really wasn't paying that close attention to it. I didn't read in-depth stories. But I do remember, and it was kind of a big deal. What was neat about this movie is the guy who does it, it has some big flaws in it in terms of he tries to do a bit of a narrative in some ways, almost like a Michael Moore kind of narrative dropped in at times, and it just doesn't work. He doesn't have the same flair that Moore has. And at one time, he brings in an actor to basically read the testimony of somebody under a cloak so that you wouldn't know who it is, and the actor's awful. The actor is just terrible, and it sounds like somebody reading fake testimony. Where it really works is setting up the timeline of events. Now, what makes a movie like Zero Day so difficult is it's about hacking and malware. And that stuff is incredibly boring, especially in a movie, to be realistic. I mean, this isn't like Hackers or Black Hat or even War Games, where you got screens and somebody sitting there, you know, looking cool and bleep, bloop, bloop. Oh, look, I hacked into the Pentagon in 3 minutes kind of thing. Hacking and programming and coding is extremely boring work, especially for somebody who's not into that sort of thing. And the movie manages to explain what Stuxnet did and explain why it is significant and why it's not just another piece of malware. And the sweeping ramifications that something like this has, and the reality that we're living in a world where this stuff can be developed by nation states rather than just a couple hackers in Russia trying to get your credit card. It also manages to frame all this in a global perspective and deal with the sometimes very tenuous politics of US and Israel and Iranian and Russian and North Korean relations that we all just know peripherally from reading the news and watching reports and seeing the crap that people post on their Facebook page. It actually frames it in a completely understandable and at times very chilling manner because you realize what this means. Now, some of it's overstated. You know, they're talking about it being the Hiroshima event. I wouldn't say that Stuxnet was a Hiroshima event because a million people didn't die as a result of the bomb. Stuxnet didn't take out a nation or end a war. I think people are more relating it to Hiroshima is because that's when the world had it first unleashed on them. I remember when I worked at a tech company back in the 90s when the Explorer.zip virus hit. Now, beforehand, there was a virus that was passed through email that all it did was just email itself to people on your email list, on your like address book. It did nothing malicious. It just emailed itself. And I remember when that happened and people were like, oh, wow, they got caught off guard because they just replied to an email or they opened an email. And all that was setting the groundwork for the Explorer.zip virus, which was a virus that would then erase your hard drive and mail itself to everybody in your address book. And what it did is it had a zip file that looked like a zip file, but it said .exe. So essentially people would get an email and it came from somebody they knew. And then you'd open it and it would wipe out your hard drive. I remember I worked at a high level tech company at the time. And when that happened, because it didn't just wipe out your computer, people had network drives and then it wiped out the drives. And fortunately, a lot of people had backups and stuff, but I knew people who got stung with that virus. The email virus was the splitting of the atom for the first time. Explorer.zip was the Hiroshima. So Stuxnet is really more of the splitting of the atom. What comes after Stuxnet is what you got to be worried about, and that's what this does talk about. And it flip-flops around from talking about data channels for espionage and warfare to real-life politics to nuclear proliferation, but it's a very interesting movie. It's definitely worth seeing, if for anything, to just make you paranoid about the future and turning on your computer or turning on your coffee maker for that matter. But yes, Zero Day is definitely worth checking out. It's really good. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Was I correct last week? I said that Finding Dory was going to make $40 million. Finding Dory made $42 million over the 3-day. When you take into account the 4-day weekend, it was over 50, which is still fantastic numbers for Finding Dory. I mean, that puts it, I think it's going into this weekend with over $400 million. It's a massive hit. Not much more you can really say about that. The thing that I found interesting was The Legend of Tarzan, which I remember saying was going to be struggling, and a lot of the tracking was saying it was going to be in the 20s. Now, The Legend of Tarzan came in with just under $40 million for the 3-day and with about $46, $47 million for the 4-day. What's interesting is that was being reported as a surprise overperforming bit of a hit. And I did step back for a minute and say, wait a minute. How is it that Legend of Tarzan, which cost probably $15 million more than Independence Day Resurgence, how is that making less in the 3-day than the previous week when Independence Day made just over 40? How is that being reported as a hit and Independence Day being reported as a bomb? And this is something I've talked about before. It's not about how much it makes. It's not even about how much it makes in relation to how much it cost. It is how much it makes in relation to how much people expected it to make. In particular, the studios expected it to make. That is why Avengers Age of Ultron could be considered a bit of a disappointment when it opens with $190 million and ends up making over $500 million. It just didn't make the $600 million that they were expecting that Avengers did. It's the same reason why Batman versus Superman can be, at this point, the number 4 highest grossing movie worldwide and have made $330 million domestically and still be considered a disappointment because people are saying, well, the other Batman movies made this should make $200 million easy for opening weekend. It didn't, and that's okay. So you always have to take these box office reports with a grain of salt because Independence Day isn't doing as poorly as some people want you to believe, and Legend of Tarzan isn't doing as well as people want you to believe. They're still going to struggle, and they probably neither one is going to make even close to their budget in America. They're going to heavily rely on foreign receipts. This week, Secret Life of Pets is going to win. I don't think anyone's debating that. It's definitely going to do more than what Finding Dory is going to do, which is probably going to be 20-some million over the weekend, and it's not even going to be bothered by Mike and Dave. That's R-rated, and it doesn't have any like really kind of stars to it. I mean, Zac Efron doesn't count now. And so let me look for like low teens for that movie over the weekend. The thing with The Secret Life of Pets is it is in competition. All the stuff Disney's done, Disney has been ruling the marketplace. You had a short blip with Angry Birds, but pretty much you had this undying run of Zootopia. Then you had Jungle Book. Then you had Finding Dory. And these movies are all doing extremely well. And it's how much competition they are still going to provide against Secret Life of Pets. I mean, I've seen people saying in the 80s, I'm going to give a soft, very conservative $65 million prediction for Secret Life of Pets. We'll see what it ends. I mean, if it comes in under that, that's going to be considered a disappointment because everybody's projecting higher. Remember what I said just previously. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Couple ones to highlight: Only Yesterday, which is a new Studio Ghibli movie. It's kind of flew under the radar. It's not Hayao Miyazaki, and that's kind of, I think, why it's flying under the radar. There's also Cabin Fever, which is the remake that's out from Shout Factory. Not as good as the Eli Roth original, and actually that's one of his few good movies that he's done. But, you know, hey, if you want to see Cabin Fever done slightly differently, you can check out Cabin Fever. There's also By the Sea, which was terrible, the one directed by Angelina Jolie, starring her husband as a couple in their relationships imploding. Boy in the World, that's an interesting film. It was an animated movie, nominated for an animation Oscar, runs a little long just because of the template and the style. Doesn't lend itself to long form filmmaking, but it's definitely a neat movie to check out. And then a couple other ones I saw: The Light, the story of Hank Williams, The Mermaid, which is that massive grossing movie from China, House of Cards Season 4, Term Life, and The Adderall Diaries. That's it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Ghostbusters and The Infiltrator. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.
Here's George Foreman with InventHelp.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
To get your free inventor's information, call 1-800-352-4914. That's 1-800-352-4914. Again, 1-800-352-4914.